The following is a meeting with devotees with His Holiness Srila Satsarupa Das Goswami, recorded on May 26, 2002, in Wicklow, Ireland.
For my talk today, I'm going to tell a true story about some ISKCON devotees, but I'll change a name so that remains anonymous. I'll call the devotee Krishna Das, even though we have a Krishna Das here, it's not him. By the way, that's a very nice picture of Lord Nrisimhadev. Who did that?
Krishna.
Yeah. And it's very clever that if you don't have room on one page to do it. I saw that in an art book. They were recommending that then you just take another page and then add another page, and you could keep adding pages to make your painting complete. Very good way to do it. Anyway, this devotee, Krishna Das, had an ISKCON spiritual master, and he was very faithful and surrendered to him, and accepted him as the representative of Srila Prabhupada in Parampara. He had nothing to do with any of these doubts that arise in ISKCON about Ritvik or some other higher guru than Prabhupada, or that ISKCON gurus are not bona fide. He was very fixed and faithful in the ISKCON guru, and he served him intimately for many years. During the course of that service, though sometimes more in an abstract kind of way than in an external way, some thoughts would come to him that a kind of a duality would occur to his mind, that between the concept of the acharya, meaning like we think of the acharyas like coming down from Vyasadeva and Narada and all those great acharyas, and the way they act and the way they teach and everything, and in which they don't even seem to be human beings. Not much is told about their, what we could call, humanity, just their teachings and their miraculous deeds. We hear how Narottam Das Thakur passed away by melting into milk in the water, and all these extraordinary things, and the devotees would be all day and night in ecstasy, something we never see nowadays in any human beings. A duality would sometimes arrive in his mind that my Guru Maharaj is my Guru Maharaj, but he's also a human being. Let's say his name was what's a good name for someone who would
Gurudev.
His name was Gurudev Maharaj. Not that he saw faults in Gurudev Maharaj's life. He never saw him acting improperly with women or anything like that. But being so close to him, he saw what he could see, you know, human traits, that he might forget something, and that his lecture or his book was not on the level of Vyasadeva or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and so he was flesh and blood. Human being. There's some saying in Shakespeare, something or other that the flesh and blood is heir to, that all human beings have certain qualities. I forget what it is. But if you come into this body, you have these things. I remember a little incident once, Prabhupada in Mayapur. He had a red inflammation in his eye. And there was one sannyasi who was often serving him, and he would be in Prabhupada's room, and Prabhupada would regularly rub that part of his eye. So that one time the sannyasi said, "Prabhupada, you shouldn't rub that." He said, "You get an infection." And Prabhupada spoke like insulted. He said, "Do not speak of the spiritual master as having an infection." He didn't like the word that he could be infected. Although he acknowledged that he had a problem with his eye. He didn't like the calling the spiritual master infected. So so this can sometimes cause a problem in the mind even of a faithful disciple. My Guru Maharaj as Acharya in Parampara, and my Guru Maharaj as, well, you were giving that name, Gurudev Ji. So he didn't want to bring it to, he kind of prayed in his mind, and he didn't want to bring it to Gurudev Ji's attention because he thought it might hurt him, hurt his feelings. He thought it might not understand what he was trying to say, and the last thing he wanted to do was to think that he had some lack of faith or something like that. But he had to, so he just kept it to himself and didn't want to speak about it with anyone else. And sometimes he even heard some devotees, even Prabhupada's disciples, speaking of a similar thing about Prabhupada. Prabhupada as a perfect devotee, but Prabhupada as a human being. These talks would be more confidentially expressed among some devotees. They would say, like, when Prabhupada calls one of his disciples buffalo brain for making some mistake, is that an expression of, is he expressing an ecstatic symptom, or was he actually, as a human being, annoyed at this stupid act by the disciple, and it didn't make him any less of a pure devotee, but he was just showing annoyance. And another, or is he completely dehumanized that he never had any human feelings like that? And some devotees wouldn't even yield to say that that he could act in a way that was human. Meaning a person like other persons. I remember when I was in the early years when I came here, Pragosha asked me a question. I guess maybe this thing was on his mind. He said, "If the spiritual master likes Rasarula, does that mean that the disciple has to like Rasarulas too?" So I said, "No, it doesn't. We're different persons. He doesn't have to do everything that he does. You're a person, and he's a person. You have to allow that he's a person who has different tastes than you, and he allows that you're a person." We don't try to imitate everything the spiritual master does. And and we can allow him the thing, allow him to be the different person that he is, without thinking it diminishes from his being a pure devotee. Prabhupada himself commented on some of this in terms of perfection of the guru, purity of the guru, on a morning walk that's often quoted, where Jai Dvaita Maharaj asked Prabhupada something about the pure devotee. Does he ever make mistakes? He seems to make mistakes. Sometimes he doesn't quote the Sanskrit right. So So Prabhupada said that is not his perfection. It's not that, or sometimes people say, if he's a pure devotee, does he know how many lights are on in the Empire State Building? You know, or if not, then that's something he doesn't know. In fact, that was a controversy that came up some months ago with the followers of Narayan Maharaj, were saying that Srila Prabhupada was omniscient. I don't know if some of you heard that. And it was caused quite a stir, and this devotees in ISKCON were writing papers against it, saying that this was, Prabhupada never claimed he was omniscient, like God knows everything. But he's purely surrendered to Krishna. And Prabhupada said, that's my perfection is not like that super soul, but that I'm fully, the pure devotee's perfection is that he's fully surrendered to Krishna. So anyway, getting back to Krishna Das and his problem, he felt he couldn't ask a spiritual master. But he wanted a guru, he wanted his guru to be able to take him back to Godhead. He just didn't want to see him as a wonderful guru who is inspiring and travels around the world and does wonderful things, but he wanted to see him as the absolute representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who by following I can go back to Godhead. And he's sent by Krishna in that way. I want that assurance. So he felt there was no one to ask, but as poet John Donne says, no man is an island entire to himself. So he decided to ask somebody. And he asked a senior devotee who trusted as a Shiksha Guru, who was also a good friend of his Diksha Guru, Guru Devji. Briefly, he didn't pour the whole thing out, but in an indirect reference, in a letter. And I'm going to read you the answer that this God brother, Shiksha Guru, wrote. I'm in an awkward position, as I have been for years in certain ways. Oh no, this is Krishna Das Ji's letter to him, excuse me. I'm in an awkward position, as I have been for years, in certain ways, being a disciple and yet being so closely involved with him on the human level. I'm always praying to Krishna to protect me from making offenses, but also from not avoiding service when service may be needed. If you have any advice on that situation, I would welcome it open-heartedly. And then the senior God brother. Hare Krishna. Read your letter. I can understand your thoughts, although I can't claim to know as much about the situation as to make my own judgment. I personally tend not to analyze these kinds of problems in others. I tend to just accept whatever is happening as what's happening. I take it that you know more than me about this situation, and that you, out of your affection and concern, have reached your conclusions. I can't comment much, but I will comment a bit. I know that you fear crossing this border between seeing him as Gurudev Ji, the person, and Gurudev Ji as your Guru Maharaj. I know that fear well. But there you are, stuck with your conclusions, which you cannot honestly deny. I've noted that there are actually two things going on in dealing with one's spiritual master. First is that he is a person. Second is that Krishna is using him to represent himself. So both are true simultaneously, and we are recommended to always see that Krishna is working through him, seeing him as not different from Krishna. Yet he is a person. He means the Guru. Somewhat of a paradox, I think. But by trusting that Krishna is always manifesting something through us, through that person, we make advancement. That seems to me to be the system that Krishna uses. And then he quotes how Krishna is thinking. Worship me through the person of your spiritual master. Although he is certainly a person, like you are a person, his purity of heart and that you have accepted him makes him my vehicle. Something like that. I've heard Prabhupada say that everyone knows the deity is made of stone, but to consider that the deity is only made of stone is an offense. I think it's the same with one's spiritual master and his, quote, personhood, unquote, his personal characteristics. I'm also learning to separate the person with his conditioned nature and his sincerity, his purity. What we may learn from our spiritual master is sometimes only the full-hearted sincerity of his attempt at service. Perhaps sometimes that is what we are learning as opposed to the specific things that he is saying. I think that you can have your opinions and you have the right as a sincere disciple to present them. And he has the right to serve Krishna in his way. His right takes preference over your right. I often think that a condition that I see in others is at least also something within myself reflected in that person. That's like what the psychologists call projection. Like if you think your guru is overeating or is angry, it's because that's what you do. I check that while reaching my conclusions. I think that's all that I can say at the present on the subject. I struggle with tangential topics myself. I guess that what I've written above probably has less to do with me answering to the point of your letter than it has to me answering me. If so, don't mind. I'll close with a quotation that you might find relevant. And then he quotes from a Prabhupada lecture, which is not exactly on the point, but it's very beautiful, about faith and our tiny position that in trying to figure out these things. It's not so much a jnani thing, it's just our tiny surrender to Krishna to give us strength. Prabhupada, so the processes recommended, they're all very valuable, but it is not possible to follow them all at the present age because everything is reducing. Our method is to pray to Krishna to give us the necessary strength. That's all. Otherwise, by regular practice, this age is very difficult, unfavorable. First thing is, memory is very short. We can't remember. Life is very short. Life is short, at the same time, so much disturbed by anxiety, by disease, by natural disturbances. Short life, disturbed by disease and lamentation. Every moment, there is something for which you have to lament. Oh, and disease. This body is a breeding ground of all kinds of disease. Life is short, so much disturbed. So how is it possible to practice? Therefore, this one practice, chanting Hare Krishna and hearing, that is very nice. And praying to Krishna, please give me strength. Hare, O energy of Krishna, O Krishna, I am fallen. I have no strength. Please accept me. That's all. I have no qualification. I am frail. I am trying, but I am falling. All these appeals should be made, and Krishna is all powerful. He can do anything. Even we do not perform trying our best. If we fall, Krishna will help us. Just like a child tries his best, but he falls down, the mother takes up and, all right, come on, walk, like that. So the disciple, Krishnadas, was very relieved by this letter and felt that all his problems were just cleared up just by this explanation, which somehow he couldn't ask his own spiritual master and couldn't figure out by himself. So he told his spiritual master about it, and spiritual master asked to see the letter, and when he did, he was happy too, and he wrote to this Shiksha Guru that you're very kind to me to bring my spiritual master, my disciple, to a surrendered position at my feet, and that you are, thank you very much. And then that Shiksha Guru wrote back again and said, actually, the more I think about this, it's the whole thing is really a question of faith. And it's all summed up in faith. And we have faith that Krishna is acting through the spiritual master. And these other things are of no consequence, that he shows some little frailty, or there's something human you see in him, or you're too mental and you're wondering about the eternal Acharya and your spiritual master. And will your spiritual master bring you to Krishna? You have faith, and Krishna will assure that. So, shall we have a discussion on that?
I thought the analogy you used about the deities was very true. That's a form that Krishna is taking. Spiritual master is a form, you know, like a human body. This is it. This is where we are, material manifestation. Jagannath deity is often painting every so often. That doesn't mean Lord Jagannath isn't great. That just means we have to do our service. It's something for us to do, look after the deities.
Right.
I know my deities, one of the eyes fell out after time. You know, these things happen. This is the...
Yeah.
The deity.
Yeah.
It's nothing about the deity. There's something we have to do. So, the same human uniform to look after.
Yeah, Prabhupada used to say, do you think all these great acharyas in the past are fools, that they would, and that millions and millions of people are fools, that they go every day to worship these deities, although they know that they're made of marble and wood? No. It's because it's in the Shastra, and it's in the faith in their hearts, and there are also many occurrences of exchanges between the deities and the devotees. So yeah, it's a good example that the apparently flesh and blood representative is also Krishna's working through him. And there's evidence of it as you worship the deity, and you feel blessed, and you feel changed, and you feel purified. So by worshiping and serving the flesh and blood, there's that Arche Vishnu Shila Dhir Guru Shu. There's a verse: anyone who sees the deity in the temple as wooden or brass, who sees the Vaishnava, a guru, as belonging to a certain nationality, or that person is a candidate for hell. So these say, well, why should we even have a guru? Why shouldn't just Krishna be here and be our guru? And it's the same as with the deity, that Prabhupada says we couldn't understand if Krishna came, yes, we have, our eyes are not pure enough, so he comes in the form, in these forms, and he invests himself completely in the forms, and we accept Krishna is in the stone. It's not stone, it's Krishna. So the spiritual master, he's also spiritual, although he's appearing as, Prabhupada used to say, he's not an ordinary person, although he appears to be an ordinary human being. So that's an analogy on many points. I remember Prabhupada having a very spirited argument about this with Dr. Patel on the beach in Juhu Beach. I can't remember all the points, but they were going back and forth about, Prabhupada was saying that the spiritual master's body is spiritual, and Dr. Patel was saying no, and the deity is spiritual, and no, it was hard to follow, but Prabhupada was upholding that the spiritual master's body is spiritual. Also, what is spiritual? I remember hearing about that from Prabhupada very early days, that spiritual is something material that you use in Krishna's service. Everything is spiritual, and we forget it, but when you use it in Krishna's service, then it becomes spiritual. And we got on a TV show, just about a year after we'd been devotees, and somebody said to me, the interviewer said, well, what is spiritual anyway? And we had a pair of cartels, and I picked up the cartels, and I said, these are spiritual. I said, they're made of metal, but we use them in the service of Krishna, so they become spiritual. And it's kind of like that. The material object used in Krishna's service, the dictaphone, the movie projector, and so forth. It's when they're using Krishna's service. Spiritual doesn't have to mean like a ghost, non-corporeal. But fully surcharged with devotion to Krishna, or being fully utilized in Krishna's service.
I think it's very timely as well, Guru Maharaj, that as devotees, that this is the way that we make spiritual advancement is through the spiritual master. I remember Prabhupada was questioned on swindlers who were masquerading as spiritual teachers, and he interrupted the person and said, there's no such thing as a bad guru. The principle doesn't exist. So in a time when our society's had so many problems and so many people have let so many other people down, there is a tendency to relativize the position.
Yeah.
For a person who's in the position of a spiritual master.
Yeah.
So it's very timely for myself, I'm sure others always can relate to remember that actually is our philosophy.
Yeah.
We need a spiritual master to make sure of the advancement.
Yeah. I use some phrase in that book, Guru Reform Notebook, something about a bogus guru or something like that. And Kirtanananda, he said, he just brushed it aside. He said, there's no such thing. He said, that's a contradiction in terms. He said, there can't be a bogus guru. But actually, there can be a person posing as a guru who is bogus. He just seemed to brush it aside by the grammar of the terms. There's no such thing as a, you could say, as a bogus actual guru, then that would be a contradiction in terms. And guru isn't the only thing, it's all the Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis who are acting purely in Krishna consciousness, not those only who are disciples. All of this applies to them too.
Yeah. I think like it's hard to understand for me that you're not supposed to be in this ordinary service, but at the same time you understand that we're individuals, that we're really individuals, and we think that we're individuals.
Yeah.
But they're not to see them as ordinary.
Yeah, well, the special individual, say like the president of the country is a person, but not an ordinary person, is the number one person, has all the power and everything, something like that. This is a material example. In another sense, she is an ordinary person. But materially speaking, she's not an ordinary person at all. You couldn't get an appointment to see her. She has all the power. She makes the decisions. So you're an ordinary person. You know, you don't have much rights or money or anything compared to that person. So the spiritual master, he has two arms, two legs, and two legs, and everything like that. But he has all these opulences that an ordinary person doesn't have. His vision of Krishna, you look at Krishna, you see stone deity with your eyes. He looks at Krishna, and he actually sees Krishna. So they're different in that way. The difference in purity. Not mundane, not an ordinary person, not a mundane person, not a lusty person, not a mean person, envious person, as far as possible, as far as his or her elevation goes. Prabhupada said that about all his devotees, that these are not ordinary boys and girls, just by the fact that they don't smoke, drink, have illicit sex or intoxication. They're certainly not ordinary. And yet they are. They look like other children and other people, but their tastes and everything are so different. And that gradation can go higher and higher to a person who is so extraordinary that he's very, very different than an ordinary person, is seeing Krishna all the time, is full of compassion for Krishna, for Krishna's living entities, like Srila Prabhupada. That Dr. Harvey Cox said he's one in a million. That he not only was very Krishna conscious, writing books in India, but decided at 70 years old to go out of India and try to bring Krishna consciousness to the whole world. So it's not an ordinary person. Many, many sadhus were also not ordinary persons doing their bhajan, but he was extra, extra non-ordinary. There's a gradation. There's this book that's just been published, Brihat Bhagavatamrita, and Narada Muni goes to visit. He's recommended to go see great devotees Do you know the basic plot? So he goes to see who's the first one of the first persons he sees is Indra, I think. And he says, "I'm told you're the greatest person." And Indra states humbly all his disqualifications that Krishna doesn't give me much attention. He just comes, he leaves an offering, then he goes. He never stays with me. If you really want to see a great devotee, you should go to see, I think he recommends Brahma. And he goes to Brahma, and Brahma says, "I'm not really a great devotee." And he states all his disqualifications. And he just goes up and up to more and more different persons until they finally reach the Brijabasis and the gopis. So even among pure devotees, they're more and more elevated, although they're all absolute. We shouldn't be aspiring to be some extraordinary devotee, but just like Prabhupada in this prayer, just realize we're fallen and said, "Please give me strength, please give me faith." Talking about the superficialities are coverings, like the covering in Vrindavan is the dirtiness and the noise and the poverty, and the covering of the Bhagavad Gita you might think is, oh, it's a dry book of philosophy. So one has to have grace and work. To try to get under it with the that covering. The covering of the spiritual master might be similar things like that. That you have to see beneath him. Prabhupada leading the world movement was very demanding on his disciples, and sometimes he seemed to be very rough, and people would misunderstand this, and wanting just a gentle guru who would speak Krishna Katha and never, you know, call anybody a rascal or anything. But Prabhupada was fighting against great odds to start the Krishna consciousness movement. So you have to, if you want to call that a covering of Prabhupada, you could. Of course, many devotees don't see it a covering at all. They just see it as an attraction. But or somebody says, "Oh, he's an old man. He's not my guru. I like a nice, beautiful young man." So if you have to see through all this silly idea of some kind of obstruction to seeing the purity.
I've actually, you know, heard people use that and choose to walk away from purity.
Prabhupada would say that God gives those people want to be cheated, so he sends the cheaters. Just so they can feed, and then they make more offenses. Jayadwaita Maharaj was telling me he was on the scene when they ran to the car where Tamal Krishna Maharaj passed away, and they were all just stunned in the hospital waiting for the formalities to be done. And Niranjana Maharaj quoted a verse that we don't really know which Bhishma said to Yudhisthira. We can't explain these things, why they happen. Some of the things that happen in the world, such a devotee at a relatively young age taken from the world, it is best not even to inquire into it, because Krishna's ways are so strange. And then another one of the devotees said, anti-ISKCON people, they'll take it, they'll say, oh, just see how Krishna smashed Tamal. And he said, and by doing that, he'll increase their offenses, they'll just pile up all their offenses. So he's giving them that chance too, because it was a death in an awkward way. So we have to be careful, that we don't see the guru or see some spiritual situation in a way that gives us an opportunity to become offensive. But try to see things kindly and with faith. Yeah.
But all these things are very subtle forms of Maya, like very subtle forms of material vision. Like you're in spiritual life, but you're still seeing these things, but it's actually you're seeing things materially. Is that what it is? You're seeing parts of the spiritual life or seeing the situations.
Yeah. Well, Prabhupada said Maya is on one side and Krishna is on the other side, like sun. See, like over there, there's a patch of sun and there's a patch of shade. He said, well, it's always like that. He said, Krishna is on one side and Maya is on the other side, behind Krishna. But all you have to do is turn away from Krishna and then you're in Maya. So there's a very thin line. You can say, oh, God is everywhere, which is true, very optimistically, that I don't even have to go to church because God is everywhere. I see God everywhere. But also Maya is everywhere. In their first temple, the one Prabhupada was staying at the temple, and one night some kids in the neighborhood, they broke the big plate glass window. So we were having class the next morning with the window broken. And after the class, the devotee said, Prabhupada, or Swamiji, he said, was that Maya? that broke the window. From was that Maya from outside that broke the window? And Prabhupada said, Maya is outside and inside. He said, Maya is wherever you forget Krishna. So it wasn't just like a force from outside that did it, but he said it's like it's ready to appear wherever you forget Krishna. In the temple or outside the temple, and Krishna can be in the temple and outside the temple. It's in our heart to not fall victim to Maya and pray, as Prabhupada said, please give me strength. I may fall down, but pick me up again. So I think we can end now. We've got many devotees went up to the island, but we had a good time.